The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
A very warm welcome to Squawkbox. These are your headlines. So, a major shakeup at Boeing. The CEO, Dave Calhoun, announces he's stepping down. He's not going to the end of the year, though. This as the plane maker fights to repair its safety reputation.
And we have this bad habit in our company, and actually in many large companies that have to assemble big products. It sends a message to your own people that, wow, I guess the movement of the airplane is more important than the first-time quality of the product.
U.S. equities drift lower ahead of this week's inflation data. This as Fed officials join forces in yet again tempering market expectations over moving too quickly on rates.
The U.S. notably abstains from a key U.N. vote as the Security Council passes a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and release of all hostages. The EU launches its first full-blown investigation under the Digital Markets Act, tightening the screws on Apple, Meta, and Alphabet over potential anti-competitive behavior.
Ousted WeWork CEO Adam Neumann eyes a comeback, reportedly making a more than $500 million bid to buy the co-working firm out of bankruptcy.
Good morning to you all. Good morning, Karen. Good morning, Arabella. I found something in the newsroom, everybody. And I found a used first-class ticket for Qantas. So I thought to myself, who could be using a used first-class ticket for Qantas as well? And then I realised Mandy Drew is in town.
First class, that can't be mine.
Good morning, how are you?
Especially not on CNBC's dime.
Exactly, you're so rich you don't even need the CNBC T&E account.
Oh, you know, I just walk on. They're like, oh, yes, ma'am, here's your seat, 1A.
Good morning, Amanda, how are you?
I'm very good, fantastic to be with you. Although I'm just looking around, this is a cast of thousands. How often do you have like four people?
Well, we're going to have five, but they haven't got a camera. I'll tell you now, it was Sergeant and Sylvia sitting both there. They were going to sit, you know, very close, not on each other's laps. That's not allowed anymore.
Oh, please.
But yeah, we were going to get 6-7 people around the set to celebrate your welcome.
So we'll have one sentence each, shall we, this show?
Unfortunately, I've already had my quota for the whole show. Lovely to see you. Good morning, Arabella. Sorry.
Good morning.
You didn't get a headline because Mandy nicked it.
No, that's perfectly fine.
Anyway, lovely to have you over. And you're here for a few weeks helping out on various shifts and things. So thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Oh, not at all. Thanks for having me.
Good. Yeah, so you haven't said a word yet?
No, that's fine.
I'm letting you get a word in.
I'm saving my powder for later.
Yeah, well, I just do my own because Mandy. I had to do my own powder because Mandy was in makeup, I tell you.
Oh, yeah, the 2 hours.
Didn't get my allotted 30 seconds.
That's fine.
Anyway, lovely. We've got some massive stories. I know Arabella's going to be looking at this next one because Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun, well, he's going to step down from his position, but he's not going to the end of the year. And if you had a problem with the management now, surely you would have the clearer? I don't know. Anyway, this is the aerospace giant shakes up its management amid the fallout from the ongoing crisis with its 737 MAX aircraft. Now, Calhoun spoke exclusively to this channel straight after the announcement. He spoke to Phil LeBeau, the latter asked about the crunch meeting that reportedly took place last week between airline CEOs and the company's chair without Calhoun in attendance.
Our board and I talk to our customers every day, all day. We've had a CEO come in and talk about the accident, talk directly with the board, and I volunteered to leave that meeting because I want clarity. I want transparency. That's what we all want. So, yeah, I understand. You know, if you put this in context, they run an every day, all day business. I run a long cycle development business and a long cycle production business has to deliver them a perfect airplane. And so those two things, when they meet and they collide, it creates this kind of environment. And that's the environment we're in. But I listen to our customers all day.
Do you understand their frustration? Because I heard from airlines last week, they said, we want concrete action. We want concrete steps to make changes.
I think the news that Brian West had to deliver just earlier this week to the financial community about the slowdown in our factory, our determination to get ahead of that. I think that will demonstrate and be a proof point on just our intent to get ahead of it. We will get ahead of it.
Have you told FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker that you're resigning or retiring at the end of the year?
No. I would never preempt the board in communicating to anybody. But the FAA is with us all week this week. We will go through a 30-day plan with them. Then 30 days later, we'll go through 60. And 30 days later, we'll go through a 90. And we're going to have to demonstrate progress in each one of those moments. And it's a pretty constructive approach, from both from the FAA and from our team.
Last week, Mike Whitaker was interviewed by NBC, and he said that when he was out here, what he saw was a culture of move the product, move the plane. It was not a focus on quality control and safety management.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you heard those comments?
Well, I recognized exactly what he was talking about because I heard it from all of our own people. Remember, we did a stand down immediately after the accident, and we listened to all our own folks. And we have this bad habit in our company, and actually in many large companies that have to assemble big products. When you do work out of a position, the message you send to your people is, and maybe that work was moved because of a shortage, maybe it was because you're trying to fix something that was non-conforming, but when you move it down the line, it sends a message to your own people that, wow, I guess the movement of the airplane is more important than the first-time quality of the product. And we have got to get that in way more balance, without a doubt.
Quick look at Boeing and where it's performed under Calhoun. And I think what's probably more intuitive is working out what it's done when Airbus has absolutely been surging over the period. And before Arabella goes into some detail on this company, the fact of the matter is these shares have halved pretty much over the period he's been in charge. And we can't blame him for COVID. That's nothing to do with him as well. But over the same period, Airbus has rallied dramatically as well. Arabella, you'd be looking at this story.
Yeah, I certainly have. Look, yes, fine. We've got that graph kind of telling you the big story over there. But he's the second CEO now to leave Boeing under this cloud, right? He has to step down due to poor quality production, as well as supply chain issues, right? You did have Dennis Muilenburg, who was sacked at the end of 2019. Of course, that was on the back then of those two crashes, that Lion Air flight in Indonesia, as well as the Ethiopian Airlines flight, those crashes which claimed the lives of hundreds of people. So that was significant and really, really massive at the time. The question mark becomes now, he's going to stay for the remainder of the year. If you wanted to really change things up and shake things up, as the market perhaps would have wanted, would you not want to do an immediate job so you can start the rebuild almost immediately? So what is this change right now? Of course, you do have the possibilities for a massive change in the whole board, because you have had this massive shakeup. You've had both the chairman and chief executive step down pretty much around the same time, which is actually a very rare occurrence within organizations and businesses. So who could perhaps step in? Right, you do have now Steve Mallinckrodt, who is the new chairman, stepping into the helm of that seat. He is the former Qualcomm CEO. Possible CEO suggestions? Well, you do have Stephanie Pope, who's only just been made COO, and she could then step in here. But the question marks are, should they be getting somebody from outside the business who isn't necessarily, let's call it, tainted by the production issues that have been plaguing Boeing of late? So that is perhaps the question mark at hand. Also, that person maybe needs to be an engineer. Let's remember that Calhoun is actually an accountant.
So the big question is whether there's an entry point here for investors. And to me, what jumped out was the long participants yesterday saying this is not a buy at this stage.
Yeah.
Effectively, that the transition here, it's not a CEO problem. It's a culture issue at the organization, and one that is not going to be cleaned up anytime soon. It could be a multi-year, even a multi-decade story. To me, that was concerning, that effectively the regulator now will go slow on the approval of any new aircraft because it may be concerned in future that there could be issues. So that's a problem when it comes to delivery and meeting some targets. You've got Spirit AeroSystems. This was one of the companies with the issues in the supply chain. How on earth does it purchase this company? It would have to pay up for it. And if it pays up for it, what would the destruction be to shareholders? Because it would be hard to see that this airline, or this company rather, could continue to make product for Airbus at the same time. So in terms of sorting through the issues, very complex for any incoming CEO.
And you alluded to this a second ago, Steve, when you were talking about, I mean, at the end of the year, that's an awfully long way away when you've got all these problems and an investor crisis. Essentially, it's going to be a lame duck
CEO-ship, isn't it? Because you don't make bold decisions. There's quite a lot of paralysis. There's also quite a lot of lack of confidence internally when you have a situation like this and no one knows exactly who's going to be taking over and what the next plan is. But I wonder whether, I mean, is Dave Calhoun, I'm just throwing it out there, is he being a scapegoat here? How much of the problems at Boeing, considering it's been a years in the making, problem?
I think Stan Deal, who is the Boeing's commercial airlines operation head of that of the commercial operations business, is the one kind of being seen actually as the scapegoat. He's also had to step down then as well in the wake of all of this.
I disagree entirely. I think if you take on the chief executive, you know this from your time in the States as well, these are gentlemen and ladies who are stunningly well remunerated. If that something so dramatic happens, and this isn't about lack of plugs in a door, this is about a culture of cutting corners potentially and concerns at the FAA that there are wider production shortcuts. If you are that gentleman in this case whose targeted annual bonus is around $17 million, you fall on your sword when this kind of stuff happens, I would imagine. I don't know.
Yep.
I mean you get brilliantly remunerated if you do well, but equally so it can be a vicious C-suite when you don't.
So I would agree with you, but I would also say just because he leaves doesn't mean the problems go away, right?
Back to exactly. The point that you guys are raising about the catalogue of issues, and like, and I love your point as well. I think, like, how can you have a new strategy until you've got a new CEO?
Right.
Like, every CEO we've ever interviewed, the four of us, there are four of us, I'm just confirming, the four of us, every CEO we've ever interviewed wants to stamp their mark on a new company.
Yeah. Just to that point, do you want an internal or an external CEO at this point? I would say external because you have such cultural issues to tackle. Mm. But if you get an external, does it take much longer to get up to speed with the internal issues? Would an internal candidate be quicker to press the foot on the accelerator for change?
Well, if they're an engineer, maybe it does change things a little bit. I mean, the last engineer they had was what? Philip Conduit, which was Condit, or rather around 2003. That helps.
There was the old GE advert many years ago. You remember this because you're around. You might remember this because you're around. Good CEO, it doesn't know everything, but he puts the right people in place. Yeah. And words of this way, to manage. And let's be honest about it. I'm moving on to your story now. The guy in charge of the most important central bank in the world, he's not an economist.
He is not. Well, let's talk about that, actually. Let's move on, because Fed Governor Lisa Cook has warned that the central bank has to take a cautious approach to cutting interest rates. Cook said that policymakers had to allow more time for inflation to cool down, while noting some progress has already been made. Meantime, the Chicago Fed President Austin Goolsbee reiterated that he's penciling in 3 rate cuts this year. But the Atlanta Fed President, Rafael Bostic, repeated earlier comments that he's expecting just 1 rate cut in 2024, adding that the Fed could afford to remain patient for the time being. I think there were a couple who even wanted no cuts this year. Not everyone's on the same page. Anyway, markets are pricing in the first rate cut from the Fed in June, with the CME Fed Watch tool pointing to a 64% chance of a cut. I think so many of these Fed speakers, because they all want to have their little 2 cents worth, don't they? They want to throw their hat in the ring to just, you know, be relevant. And the refrain later this year is the one that you hear the most. In other words, we don't really know. Anyway, Karen, over to you.
Mandy, too many mixed messages for the markets yesterday. And you could see that as a result, we had a drop across the board, modest decline for the Dow, the S&P and the Nasdaq. And this after markets had effectively changed some of their estimates for year-end targets. We saw that from Goldman's have been adjusting those levels higher for the target price for the likes of the S&P for this year. And you could see yesterday a little bit of disappointment if we're talking about 1 rate cut and the market's just listening into that narrative. 5-18, don't forget the market has been disappointed already as they lined up rate cuts for this year. So the prospect of 1 just falling a little bit cold for some investors at this point. I want to take you to what we're seeing elsewhere across on treasuries. The early market action looks like this. We're 4.59, the T, a little bit of movement yesterday, but we've settled around that level this morning. We're 4.25 at the long end. To the Asian markets and the early trade across the region is like this. 8.10 up for Hong Kong, weaker elsewhere, modestly downbeat, as you can see, for Australians stocks, Chinese names down by just over a tenth of a percent, and a slightly flat play for the Japanese stock market today. To the opening calls to the European markets, we had a fraction of a move to the upside yesterday on the benchmark, the Stoxx Europe 600. We are still around this fresh all-time high on the benchmark. And if you look at individual markets, there's still some appetite. The DAX, for instance, yesterday, another move higher, up a third of a percent, fresh all-time high as well. But we were not in lockstep. We did see a decline on both the FTSE and also on the French market. So this morning, we are chasing green arrows across some of these boards, as you can see, Italian to German stocks firmer. But we are also watching a slight red arrow on the FTSE 100, Steve.
Super duper, Karen. Thank you. S&P Global Ratings have slightly downgraded their 2025 growth outlook for the European economy, pointing to persistently high labour costs and sluggish productivity. Joining us to discuss is Sylvain Boyer, who is the chief EMEA economist, S&P Global Ratings. Sylvain, thank you very much indeed for joining us. We've had a growth problem for a very long time in Europe, and we've possibly had a productivity problem for a long time in Europe as well. Is there any change in how both of those key aspects of the economy have maneuvered over the last year or so?
Yes, so the productivity is definitely becoming an issue in Europe. So there are some mixed news. The good news probably is that the European economy remains on track for activity to improve. We will see that later this year, owing to lower inflation. But definitively, the rebound in growth over 2025-2026 appears more limited than thought before, because we have this productivity issue. Productivity is now below trend, below pre-pandemic long-term trend. That's quite something new. And also another reason is that the expected rebound in public investment due to the implementation of this huge package from the European Commission, the Next Generation EU, this is falling also behind schedule.
Sylvain, there's nothing much in this report around AI at this point. And if, as we talk about productivity, one of the greatest changes coming seems to be the new technology. How do you factor that in, and when do you start factoring in AI productivity gains?
Well, it's very early stage to assess how AI can help restore productivity, especially in the service sector. These productivity issues we have now are coming mostly from services. It's early stage. Hopefully it could help, but as said, a bit early to tell.
Sylvain, maybe jumping in here, you're expecting the ECB to start cutting in June with three rate cuts penciled in for 2024. What would change that? What would push out the timeline for you from June, or maybe even reduce those cuts from three?
Yes, I think Christine Lagarde has been crystal clear about the timing of the first rate cut. We should not expect something before June. That's almost for granted. The risks are more for the ECB to postpone the rate cuts because of high inflation, and especially inflation in services, domestic inflation, which remains far above a target, around 4% for services. And one issue with inflation, or one reason why inflation could recede less than thought, is high labor costs, soaring wage growth in the context of sluggish productivity.
Yeah, but I can't see anything, Sylvain, when I was looking at the various industries in certainly Northern Europe, that is going to see that those wage increases are going to abate. I know the politicians want wiggle room from the central bankers so that actually we can see cuts, but the wage increases, correct me if I'm wrong, they're set to go on, aren't they?
Well, we, at the level of the Eurozone, in aggregate, we see that wage growth is barely moderating, but at least no more accelerating. So we are around 4% increase in marginal wage growth, if you look at the real-time data, for instance, the Indeed wage tracker. But 4%, it's far above the productivity we have now, which is negative. So, and 4% wage growth remains far above the expected rebound in productivity we should see next year, 1%, something like that. So even with a bit more growth, wage growth will remain around 3%. So 3% means 3% unit growth in unit labor cost means 3% core inflation. That's probably still too much for the ECB. So we should expect more some reduction in profit margins to help inflation coming down. That would help the ECB to do the first step towards rate cut.
Sylvain, thank you so much for joining us today. Sylvain Boyer with us, Chief EMEA Economist, S&P Global Ratings. Coming up on the show, the U.S. allows a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza for the first time. We'll have the latest from the region right after the break. Plus, the EU launches a probe into tech giants Apple, Meta and Alphabet. We'll bring you the details later this hour. And we'll dig into the latest market action with Mohit Kumar, who is Chief European Economist and Strategist at Jefferies. That interview is coming up at 8 CET.
Ambition to me is about doing better.
I think ambition creates a pathway.
The best advice I can give someone starting off a career is don't have a career, have lots of careers, try loads of different things.
Talk to people and put your ambition out there.
I don't feel that I've hit peak ambition because it's a learning journey.
CNBC is where ambition meets opportunity. What does living ambitiously mean to you? Hear it from our CNBC anchors, reporters and global business leaders on CNBC.com.
Welcome back to Squawk Box. The UN Security Council has voted to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza for the rest of the month of Ramadan and the release of all hostages being held by Hamas. The US abstained from the vote, thereby allowing its passage. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu cancelled a planned delegation's visit to Washington in response. Let's get more on this evolving story with Dan Murphy. Good morning, Dan.
Hi, Mandy. Well, I've just finished a conversation with Israel's former foreign minister, Shlomo Ben Ami, for his reaction to this major development on the war front. And he said that this vote ultimately shows that Netanyahu has become a threat to Israel's national security. He says America is fed up, and this means that we are now at a turning point in this war. Certainly some very strong commentary from that former senior Israeli official. So let me take you back. What has happened here? Well, the UN Security Council has approved this resolution that calls for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. This is the first time that we've seen a vote of this kind in nearly 6 months of war, so it is significant. And this resolution, which the Council, of course, passed because the US abstained, calls for a ceasefire in Gaza for the remainder of the holy month of Ramadan, which is expected to wrap up in around 2 weeks' time. Now, Prime Minister Netanyahu, reportedly furious that the United States allowed this to pass. He's accused the US of abandoning its position on the war. But the State Department says it was surprising and unfortunate that this Israeli delegation then decided to cancel these scheduled talks in Washington as a result. Here's how the US explained its decision to abstain and reacted to Israel's move to cancel that visit. Listen.
There were issues with which we had concerns related to that resolution, the fact that it did not condemn Hamas's terrorist attacks of October 7th. That's why we didn't vote for it. But the reason we didn't veto it is because there were also things in that resolution that were consistent with our long-term position. Most importantly, that there should be a ceasefire and that there should be a release of hostages, which is what we understood also to be the government of Israel's position. So it is a bit surprising and unfortunate that they're not going to apparently attend these meetings.
The State Department's Matt Miller there. So the obvious question is, what happens next? Well, the UN's highest body has now ordered Israel to cease fire, but the indication that we're getting on the ground here is that it is unlikely to happen. Israel has already indicated that it will not comply with the order at this point. Israel's foreign minister has said that it will destroy Hamas and continue to fight until the last of the hostages return home. So that is the signal that we're getting at the moment. And it's unclear where this is going to leave Israel from a legal perspective. It certainly wouldn't want to be in contravention to this UN Security Council resolution here. So what happens next remains to be seen. What we do know is that the United States has said that Israel could face significant consequences if it makes the mistake of invading Rafah, where more than 1 million Palestinians are still sheltering. Of course, Netanyahu has vowed to push on with the war front in Rafah with or without the support of the United States. So exactly what happens next remains to be seen, but this is a very significant development on the war front between Israel and Hamas.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to cnbc.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.